Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to All Stats On. We are podcasting which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the Calvin Phillips drilled pass of the podcast, inch perfect and beautiful to watch. And I'm joined by the Jack Harrison first three touches and a shot of the podcast, Tom Woodhead. Not often correctly done in the right order, but stunning when it comes off. And finally, the dangled leg of Rodrigo of the podcast. No, no, oh. No, it's Josh Hobbs. Josh, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. That was a funny one to get there. I knew I'd get the abusive one, as I'd seem to get whenever Darren's not on. It basically depends whether I'm on with Darren, doesn't it? Whether I get the abuse or not. But yeah, doing well.
Good. And Tom Woodhead, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, sir.
Oh, nice and simple. Right, this is, of course, the Liverpool match preview podcast, so...
Review podcast.
I'm so bad at this. Did I say preview again?
Yeah,
review. It's the Liverpool review podcast. Basically, can we just agree that when I say one, I mean the other, and just treat that as the rule. How did it feel, Tom Woodhead, to be back in the Premier League?
It felt... terrifying at first. It felt exciting. It felt it was very gratifying to be able to see us playing our way and it looking pretty much like we remember it, but against one of the best teams in the world.
It was certainly a weird emotional experience, I think, going from conceding a penalty in the first 5 minutes and thinking, this could be not quite as fun as we expected it, to actually giving the game a good old go, really. Hobbsy, how was the game for you?
Yeah, I said before the game yesterday, I'm determined to enjoy this. I've waited for 16 years. I don't have an expectation of us getting anything against Liverpool. I just want to enjoy it. And actually, we ended up playing so well, despite the carnage of the game, that I was ultimately disappointed because I thought we might actually get something at Anfield. And I woke up this morning still feeling that way. Woke up this morning feeling, oh man, we actually nearly took something from Anfield. So I don't want to be like that throughout the season, where I sort of just spend every game being like, oh, I'm great, just grateful to compete kind of thing. But against Liverpool, you've got to have that sort of reality. And yesterday was fun. We announced ourselves in the Premier League, even though we lost. We announced ourselves. People realised, Leeds are going to be something to behold, at least.
Yeah, and given that the other two promoted sides sort of whimpered to 3-0 losses,
exactly.
I'm assuming that West Brom didn't concede another goal after I stopped watching.
No, it was 3-0.
It was a real emotional roller coaster, as I say. You know, it was a funny one because I think we all came into this not wanting to get our hopes up too much. I don't think we wanted to. We didn't want to sort of jump to any sort of conclusion. But after going down the goal and then constantly coming back after Liverpool went up 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, 3-2. like you said, Hobbsy, at the end, it almost felt as though we'd done enough to at least get a point. Is that how you felt, Tom?
It definitely felt like that at the time, yeah. I mean, I think always when you concede a goal that late on, you're going to be disappointed and you're going to feel like you could have got something out of the game. But I think it was mostly the just the general flow of things that it looked like we were a force to be contended with that made me happy. Like you could see at times Liverpool defenders just looking genuinely worried about us, which when you say, as you say, when you watch that West Brom game and the Fulham game, you didn't really see much of that from the opposition.
Right, so let's start going through the game itself in terms of maybe the mechanics of it a little bit more. I'm going to reverse the order that I've put down on the running order. I put defensively, then offensively. So let's start with the offensive side of things, because I think we should get the XG battle out of the way early on. So we've got a couple of questions from listeners. So the first one is from Stephen, who says, why was our XG so low? Isn't Click's chance worth 0.3 XG on its own, given proximity to goal? And also, is that a record low in the Bielsa era? And Jonathan Turner, says, after 16 years of hurt, is there now less pressure on Leeds now? Are they able to just set themselves free of worry? Thinking in relation to Harrison's and Clich's shooting seemed less nervy than last season. So the reality is that yesterday various models gave us from between like 0.25 to about 0.6 XG for our three goals, which is unlike us. I tweeted from our account yesterday, I like this clinical version of Leeds United that we've got in the Premier League, and that was very much the situation. How do we feel about the XG battle? It's funny, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people sort of set this up as being the potential Norwich game this season. Of everyone will remember the Norwich game that Liverpool played in their opening fixture last season, where Norwich ended up losing 4-1, and everyone came out saying that they were naive tactically. But actually, if you looked at the performance, really, on the basis of the numbers, Norwich were a little bit unlucky and they could probably have scored a little bit more. This feels to me as though it was maybe the other way around. It feels as though Leeds were obviously lucky to get three goals out of their game. And I suppose had those goals not gone in, we could be having a completely different conversation today, and we could have been, the media could have had a completely different conversation yesterday, and it might have set off the season in a whole different way. So I'll go to you first, Hobbsy. What's your whole take on the XG thing?
On Y Scout, we've got the three goals. Bamford's goal, 0.41 XG on Y Scout, which is so different to Info Goal, which had 0.06. Like, I actually can't believe the discrepancy between the two there. But it's very hard to sort of say too much about that, other than that I think that one should be, I reckon that should be sat in the middle, like 0.2 kind of thing. But we obviously didn't create loads in terms of actual shots, and the ones that we had, we pretty much all scored them all. But I think what I would say is we got their defence turned on several occasions. We got in behind on several occasions, and they had to make last-ditch blocks and interceptions to stop. Like, Hernandez went in behind and tried to square it to Bamford. Van Dijk just cut it out just before it went to Bamford, who would have been in acres of space on the edge of the box. I think that happened maybe twice. And then Bamford got put through on goal just before Harrison scored, and that I think would have been our best chance of all if Bamford had taken the shot instead of trying to take around the keeper, which he even said himself after the game in his interview. He said that he felt annoyed at himself that he didn't take that shot. But I think it's a weird one when you outshoot XG as much as we did in that game. But I think there is a little bit of a pattern for us under Bielsa where we actually seem to outshoot our XG in games where we aren't dominant, but in games where we create like 3-4 XG, that's where we really, really struggle to score. And I don't know exactly why that happens. Maybe because of the sort of shape of opponents' defences, making it that the shots are actually easier to get off. Harrison had them backpedalling. Bamford had a clear one-on-one, and that I think the Click goal was just a very well taken goal. But sorry, I've gone off on a real monologue there, but
I think it's interesting because it's almost like the same sort of thing that we see in reverse a lot of the time.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And we talk about that a lot in terms of the fact that Liverpool play a really high line. They're playing possession football, and the reason they play that high line is because they want to compress their team so that they can make quick counter presses if they lose the ball in turnovers. And we do a similar thing. We don't do it quite so much as they do, but I suppose that means that Liverpool are always going to be on the risk of being able to be broken on. And the same is true of us. Like, we try and do build up play, and if we lose the ball in build up, we're quite open. So that when teams counter attack us, you're going to create those chances that are maybe a little bit easier, so they don't show up in the XG as much. So I think there's maybe something going on there as well. Tom, what's your take on this?
I think a lot of the time on our really high XG games, you know, when we're posting up like 2.5, 3, 4 XG occasionally in games last season, a lot of it tends to be made up of lots of very small XG chances, I think, as well. Like, we have, you know, a load of like 0.1 XG chances where people are getting blocks in, or, you know, it's cutbacks to a player who's, you know, got a couple of players in front of him and things like that. And we didn't really have any of those yesterday because it was a completely different kind of game. So I think that there's that element of it. I mean, and then there is also the fact that obviously when you only create three chances and score all of them, that is an element of luck. But I wouldn't want to get too bogged down in it, because I think as again Josh was saying, there was that Pablo cutback that if Van Dijk doesn't get his toe to that, then that's a great chance. And again, the Bamford one, which neither of those would have registered on XG. So I think there are sort of caveats. In the end, we did lose the game. So it's not like we can sit here saying that we were ultimately lucky in terms of the fact that we didn't get that point. We could have probably sat here and said, yeah, we were lucky if we ended up drawing the game, but we didn't. We lost. So I think it's fair enough.
Yeah, and it was. I think we were, even though we would have been lucky to have drawn it, we still would have felt that we put in a fantastic performance. So it's not like it's not like we're saying, oh, we didn't really create enough to warrant the three goals that we scored, but just saying on another day that it might not have gone like that. But
we said to the players they need to step up and be better in the Premier League, and Jack Harrison did it, and, you know, it's, to an extent, people like Costa did it. I think Bamford played magnificently. Mm. So, you know, this is players reacting to what they need to do, and hopefully we see more of that as the weeks go on.
And it's certainly a good indicator that underdog football suits us in that respect. And I think that's something that we'll certainly take forward into the new season. I suppose my big sort of worry is that, you know, we take this sort of performance, a 4-3 loss, and we sort of over exaggerate its meaning on the basis of the XG, and we sort of say, you know, we're going to be fine in the Premier League because we scored three against Liverpool, when actually if you boil down the numbers, it really looks like we've been quite lucky to score three. And you know, I'd much rather we wasted our good luck in terms of overperforming XG in games against Crystal Palace than against Liverpool. But it may simply be the case that, you know, the game state being what it was, we were more likely to do that against Liverpool than Palace. But I don't want to talk too much about expectations going forward, because we'll do that later on in the podcast. Let's carry on talking about some of the attacking aspects of the game. So we've talked about how we didn't create a lot of chances, and there was a question from Brolin Ate the Pie about the Liverpool press. In fact, there's two questions from Brolin Ate the Pie, and I think they were linked, but we can talk about this. The first question is this: Leeds conceded possession in the middle third. Was this Liverpool's pressing force, forcing the pace of Leeds' play? And then he asks, Leeds seemed unable to clear lines from corners effectively, or recycle balls back into the box, creating opportunities for Liverpool. Was this due to an inexperienced centre-back pair? I suspect that the two things are linked. Let's talk about the Liverpool's pressing, because I think Liverpool's obviously pressing was obviously very, very intense. But what I'm really interested in, actually, is whether or not you think that Leeds tried to play over the press more than they would have done in the Championship. Were they playing a high-pressing team in the Championship? We know that Leeds struggled in the Championship against high-pressing teams, especially against Barnsley. It felt like, to me anyway, that Melier was going long more than we would expect. It felt like we were actually using Melier in the build-up play a lot more than we would usually. Usually we were playing it between the two centre-backs, not really going back to the goalkeeper at all. And yesterday we were hitting the goalkeeper all the time in build-up. And also it just sort of felt like we were generally going longer, quicker. We were under more pressure. So, yeah, Hobbsy, what did you make of Liverpool's pressing and how do you think that affected our attacking play? Was it ever in our game plan to try and build up more, or was that something that simply was forced by Liverpool?
There was always an expectation that this is going to be sort of the most we've been pressed. Well, I guess that's what I thought, but I'd actually say I felt more scared by Barnsley's press, that just however long that was ago, it wasn't even a couple of months ago, but whenever that was, that press from Barnsley seemed to worry me more. I think we obviously, like you say, we were trying to, I guess, work our way around that, sort of chipping it out to fullbacks quite a bit. It seemed to go out to Ayling quite a bit. And then also, I tweeted this earlier, but I couldn't believe how easy it was for Phillips to receive the ball in the middle, turn and play the ball to Harrison for our first goal. I thought he would be sort of swarmed, but Keita was sort of nowhere near him when he received the ball, and Firmino had obviously gone. I think he went to Strouk at the time. So we were managing to get through it in the middle on the occasion, and in that occasion it was obviously we cashed in. And as you say, we were trying to play over the top to the wings. And I think we'll see that not just against Liverpool. I think we'll see that in against any team that wants to press us in the Premier League. Because Harrison and Costa have got pace and they're real outlets for us. And I think, I didn't expect Harrison to have been that decisive and that clinical. I was really, really pleased to see that. Hope to see that more. A fantastic goal for our first goal back. And Costa, I think, had a really good game as well. So I hope that we do keep doing that, sort of going to them early.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on Y Scout today trying to... I'm doing a video analysis piece which will go up on our Patreon. And I wanted to do something about Liverpool's pressing because I was quite interested in it. And maybe it's because I'm not very good at using Y Scout, but I actually struggled to find any real examples of us losing the ball in a counter press in the sort of classic sense of the word. It felt like a lot of the time we lost the ball in build-up because we passed badly, which I think is the result of pressing, but it's not sort of your standard "this is why you press" kind of pressing, if that makes any sense. So
yeah.
What I found really interesting was that actually it felt as though we were breaking up the build-up play at times, because I don't know whether it was nerves or not, but I found Stuart Dallas was losing the ball a lot from poor passing.
The worst
offender in terms of the losing the ball in pressing was actually Pablo Hernandez, which is very bizarre. But we'll talk about Pablo later on. But in that sense, it felt to me just initially on a couple of watchbacks that Leeds were not trying to get bogged down in a pressing battle in the midfield with Liverpool. They were trying to move the ball quickly and then get it over, like you said, to the wide players. Rather than sort of trying to play through the press. Although there are a few times when we did play through the press, it just felt like we were much happier to, if there was the threat of a press, to just get the ball long and see what we could do with it there. Tom, in terms of your watching of the game, how did you read this side of things? Did you feel under pressure from Liverpool a lot of the time? How did you feel in terms of the sort of pace of play in the middle when the game was going on?
There were a couple of things that I noticed. One of them was that although Liverpool were pressing us, they almost seemed to, just as they reached the man, stop. And I'm sure that was deliberate, like, to cut out passing lanes rather than attempting to tackle, as I feel like if this was Harrison pressing, Harrison would probably try and win the ball when he's going up against the opposition defender, whereas Mane and Salah would stand slightly off the defender and let them try and play a pass. And the other thing I noticed was that Click and Hernandez were not coming deep in build-up anywhere as often as they normally would. Like when we have games where we have 60-65% of the ball, you'll have one of the central midfielders, one of the eights, will come back and play with Phillips. And we didn't really see that at all yesterday. Maybe once or twice from Hernandez. And as you said, he lost the ball a couple of times. But usually those players were staying fairly high up the pitch because we weren't, yeah, as you say, getting bogged down in that playing around at the back too much. We were trying to get the ball forward quite quickly. So I guess it makes sense to have them up there ready to support the attack.
Yeah, I should say and reiterate this, that Liverpool do press differently to us. We have an aggressive press where we're sort of ball orientated, where we just go to the ball and try and win it back with the two closest players so that we can get all of our players off the ball into that man-oriented structure. Whereas Liverpool are doing a lot more of a sort of funneling exercise with their pressing. So they know that they're vulnerable down the wide areas. So they want to get the ball away from the wide areas and get it into the middle, where they've got three midfielders who sit fairly deep. So it sort of gets bogged down a little bit more. So their press is, I think, a little bit more designed to sort of funnel the ball into the middle. And then you've got your three central midfielders who you can then have your aggressive counter-press in. So I think that's an important point to make. So, yeah, thanks for that. Let's move on and talk about the... You've already mentioned Costa and Harrison, Hobbsy being decent. James Smethurst asked if we could give some sort of analysis of the winger swapping over. This happened for about 10 minutes before the end of the first half, maybe a bit longer than that. And he says, why was this and how successful was it? Tom, we'll stay with you. What did you make of this? Did you think this was a sort of just an attacking mix-up thing? Or did you think... I suggested on the Twitter feed that it was maybe defensive, but I'm not entirely sure I'm right in saying that. So what was your take on this?
I mean, the only thing I could think of was that Harrison had already scored. He was having a good game on the left, but most of Liverpool's danger was coming down the other side. So I wondered if maybe because Robertson, Ayling was doing well getting forward on the right, and maybe it was something to do with that we wanted Harrison, who was at that point, you know, full of confidence following his goal, maybe have him in more positions where we are linking up well on the right hand side and where Liverpool won't look as dangerous when they break. Because I think Ayling dealt with Mane incredibly well throughout the entire game. So I guess that would make it a defensive thing in a sense. But I just wondered if it was to see whether that combination between the fullback and the winger would maybe work a bit better than the way it was.
For me, it was linked to Hernandez on that side too, I think. Costa's obviously like the weaker of the two wingers in terms of defensive work. And Hernandez, if he's playing over on that right-hand side, that combination of Costa and Hernandez, it doesn't really give much cover to Ayling at all. So that was my thinking. But Hobbs, have you got any advance on that?
No, not really. I obviously noticed it at the time that it happened, but I wasn't entirely sure why it was happening, but it is also something that I'd like to see a bit more of. I just like the idea of wingers that swap just to give fullbacks a little bit more to think about, particularly as both of those players are capable of playing on either side. It just brings something a little bit different. But as you say, it may well have been a defensive thing, but I quite like it in an attacking sense.
What I didn't really understand about it was that it just sort of happened and then it unhappened.
Yeah. And then we didn't do it again.
Yeah, exactly. So whether or not there was like an inversion in terms of the two eights, I didn't really notice. I haven't looked at that enough because I didn't get the ball enough, the two eights, for me to really focus on them in watching. So I wonder whether or not they switched over. Maybe Bielsa decided that actually wanted Harrison back over on the other side, so they switched Hernandez and Click over in the middle. But that's just pure speculation for me.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's move on to talk a little bit about the defensive side, because the defensive side is so fascinating. I know I'm on a bit of a Bielsa's defensive system push at the moment, but let's talk a little bit about that. I think the biggest question on everyone's lips was, one, is Robin Koch going to fit into the system well? And the other one was, is Pascal Strauch good enough to play on his own with Koch? So we had a couple of questions about this. Matt Keegan's Wood, friend of the podcast, said, I know it's one game, but are we more comfortable that Strauch can be an able Cooper deputy at left centre back? He said, I thought Koch looked decent as well after a difficult start. He could have melted, but got better as the game went on. And then Sydney Rough Diamond says, when out of possession, I believe White was pretty much always the spare man. How do you see the roles of Strauch and Koch when Cooper is absent? They both played that role at times yesterday. So, yeah, we'll go with you, Hobbsy. What did you make of the centre-back pairings? How did you think Koch played, and how did you feel about Strauch?
Horrible first few minutes, I would say, for both of them. But I'm not holding that against them. It was the worst situation for them to be dropped into, for Koch to make his debut against Liverpool, having only had 4 days with the team in the first place, is hard enough if Liam Cooper had been next to him. Having to suddenly be the senior centre-back in a team that you don't know is a horrible situation, and for him to have that penalty given against him, just nasty stuff to have. But I also thought Strauch got caught out in behind a couple of times early on, I think, with Firmino running off the back of him. And it was just a bit, in that first sort of 5 minutes, I was thinking, oh, this could be an absolute battering here. But then I think they both settled. Strauch particularly, I was particularly impressed with his passing once he got himself settled. And I think both of them, I'm not going to judge either of them really on that game. I'm pleased with what I saw from Strauch, particularly because I just didn't know how he would be able to stand up in the Premier League in general, let alone against that front three. So I think he can contribute there going forwards, although that isn't to say that I'm not wanting another centre-back. And Koch, I'm sure, will step up. And I think he looked better as the game went on, although I noted that he seemed basically quite terrified to make another block after giving away the penalty. And I think that might have contributed to him not getting out to block Salah's second goal in the way that he probably would have done. He did go towards the ball, and he still made, let me just tell you, he still made the second most blocks in our team after Ayling. So he made 5 and Ayling made 6. But I just didn't think he was as aggressive in going for it as he would have been. And I think you would be shaken in confidence, wouldn't you, after giving away a penalty at Anfield in the first 3 minutes of your debut.
Tom, what did you make of Koch's debut? I think it's interesting, isn't it, how many people have been citing him as a like-for-like replacement for White, and I've always been a staunch defender that he isn't a direct replacement for White. What did you make of his game yesterday?
Yeah, there were in possession. I think you could clearly see that he's not the same kind of player as White. He did bring the ball out once, I think, but in general, he's clearly as well still learning the patterns of our midfield and how they rotate when we've got the ball at the back, which, you know, that's not his fault. In general, apart from that, because I don't think it was a penalty, so I'm not going to hold that against him. I thought he played okay, like solid, not spectacular, something to build on. And Strauch, I thought as well, I take that he does have one big weakness, I think, which is his pace on the turn, his acceleration when people run past him. He's usually a yard or two behind them by the time he's properly turned round. But apart from that, I think he looks like he could do okay. He's definitely big enough and strong enough to cope with the physicality of the Premier League if... you know, that element of pace aside. So and as Josh said, his passing was really good. So you can never be totally happy when you've conceded 4 goals with your defence, can you? But I think it definitely looked like something to build on.
Yeah, and in answer to that second question about the spare man, and in response to actually what you were saying, Hobbsy, about it seeming like Strouk was getting turned a lot in the first few minutes. Actually, again, I've done quite a bit of analysis on the centre back positioning from the first half in the video analysis that I'm putting out for tomorrow. And it, actually, one of the things that I've noticed is that the centre backs have to pick up a huge amount of slack from the rest of the team. And what you see a few times actually is Strouk having to sort of gamble on do I go for the ball with the player marking that I'm marking. Is it more important for me to close down the ball carrier or the stay with the player that I'm marking? Yep. And a few times he makes the decision to go for the ball. So there's one example, I think very early actually, there's that chance in about 1 minute 30 where I was just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I can remember this.
This is going to be awful. But yeah, essentially, I can't remember who it was, but someone gets around. I think it's either Alexander Arnold or Keita, but gets past, loses his own man marker, comes towards Strouk with the ball, and Strouk's got Firmino on him, and Strouk has to decide, do I step back with Firmino and let Keita come, or do I go to Keita and then Firmino can go behind me? And that's the reason why Strouk goes to him, is because we literally have the free man for this reason, right? So you should feel confident that you can go for the more dangerous player and the person behind you will then pick up your man. And yeah, that didn't happen a few times. And I think the issue is that as soon as you have an imbalance further up the field, the book stops with the centre backs, and so everyone will be like, oh, the centre backs had a terrible game, when actually if you trace it back genetically, you get to a point where you say, and actually a few times it was Stuart Dallas, he's just sort of out of position, and then the rest of the team has to sort of fold back in terms of different orders of preference until it comes back to Strouk, who then has two players on him and he has to pick one and he just can't win either way. But I agree with Sydney Rough Diamond, who's I do think that Koch is going to be the extra man, but the thing is that it is fluid. We put up a video on our Twitter feed the other day of Bielsa coaching Argentina, and he calls it a partial libero. So yeah, the free man is the libero, and what he says is that you, as a defender, you're constantly making that assessment: am I in the best situation here, or should I push on to a different man and then allow the free man to pick up my man? And that was happening a lot yesterday, and I think as the game went on, it got better. I think we generally got better at making sure we're sitting in that system. And to be fair to you, again, like, Koch has only been playing for like 4 days or whatever it is with the side, so I wouldn't hold that against them. But sticking with the man-oriented system, we did have a few questions about things. So GMF asked, do you reckon there will be any situations where we would be better to switch from the man marking system, say against City, or we would just rock it all season? Liverpool, Elland Road, what would you do differently, if anything? And then Simon Bielsa Peel, which I suspect is probably not his actual name, says, is talk of 4-4-2, 4-1-4-1, etc. passé? Does Bielsa defend plus one and attack minus one render talk of such formations somewhat defunct? I only thought of this when I saw Leeds against a team as good as Liverpool, although obviously we were very fluid over two seasons, especially versus Barnsley. And there's another clip that I've included in the video analysis of Luke Ayling chasing Mane all the way over into the left back area, and actually results in a chance for Mane later on, because Ayling actually pulls back across to the sort of right back position and Mane stays where he is. But it did make me think of that, and I was thinking, you know, what would it actually look like if we literally stayed in that pure man oriented system? So you don't have like a back four of a left back, two centre backs and a right back. You just sort of say, well, you're going to be keeping an eye on these players, so if you invert the wingers, you just switch sides as the left back and right back. But I think it's mad for a lot of reasons. One of which is simply that you just can't keep up that kind of man marking in a really fluid system. So there has to be crossover and stuff like that. But Tom, what's your take on this in terms of the man oriented system? Do you think we're tactically flexible enough to be able to do that sort of tweak and just be like, right, we're going to zonally mark now? Or do you think once you're in and that's it?
I think it would be an absolute disaster if we just suddenly decided for one game to, oh yeah, we're going to completely change this up. I think for better or for worse, we're in this for the long haul, and it's going to be man to man, because that's just how we've been playing for 2 years and how how we'll continue to play. I can definitely see that it would make pragmatic sense to switch things up against someone like Man City, but it would go badly wrong, I think, if we did.
Hobbsy, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think it's not just how we've played for two seasons, but it's how Bielsa has coached for his entire career. He ain't changing. Like, and if we were gonna ever change it, it would have been yesterday. So the fact that we turned up and we did it like that yesterday tells me, yeah, that's the all the evidence you're going to need that that's not going to happen. And one example that really stood out to me yesterday, it was near the end of the first half, and for a minute I thought Bamford was injured because they had the ball, in the back line, and I was thinking, where is Bamford? He would normally be there, sort of pressing the centre backs, and then the camera sort of panned out a bit, and he was stood in our right back position, marking someone in the right back position. I was like, he's followed someone all the way back there. Like, yeah. What's just? I can't believe. Like, that was one of the most stark examples that I've seen of, like, that's your man and you follow that guy until you then, for whatever reason, you then pass him over. But I was quite surprised that he hadn't passed him over. But yeah. Pat Bamford marking at right back.
There was another moment I remember when, and it was the moment when Carragher picked up on it as well, but where Koch followed Firmino basically deep into their own half almost. And you could actually see Firmino kind of like, what's going on here? Like, he was sort of like, he kept coming deeper and deeper. And then he looked at his teammates like, this guy is not going to leave me alone.
I think what I would say about the defensive system is we gave up 1xG from open play yesterday against Liverpool away at Anfield. I don't think that Bielsa is going to look at the numbers and think we should be changing things up. I think that's a damn good job.
Yeah.
Defensively, I would say as well that our defensive system looks, I think a lot of the time it looks bad. There's an aesthetic quality to our defending which makes people think that things are worse than they actually are. It reminds me of the phenomenon that people talk about with Burnley as well, where you look at Burnley and you just think they should be doing so much worse than they actually are, but they get a huge amount of blocks in. We got in, I think it was 13 blocks over the course of the game yesterday, which is pretty ridiculously high. And you don't want to be getting into situations where you're having to make last-ditch tackles, but if your system is allowing you to do that, you're clearly doing something right. And yeah, you know, when you man mark so tightly, it only takes one mess up for the whole system to fall to pieces once. So it's a funny old thing. So it goes between sort of being the most beautiful thing ever. I spend time like watching our videos back, and when you see the whole thing actually work out, and you can trace all the players switching their markers all the way through the pitch, and then ending up defending successfully, it looks really great. But as soon as one person messes up, and then everyone else is out on their back, then you can create those chances. Those chances do emerge. So I think it's fine.
The classic situation I remember last season was Eddie Nketiah chasing back for the first goal that Birmingham scored in the 5-4, when he couldn't get the right side of his man. And then Harrison and Alioski were like, oh, he's coming at us and Eddie's not got it. One of them went out, and then suddenly the entire left side was free, and they just ran in behind, cut the ball back for Jude Bellingham to score. And that was like, oh, that's what happens if the man-marking system goes wrong. They just scored a piss-easy goal.
Right, one more thing on defensive side of things, which is set pieces. We had a bit of a discussion about there's a couple of things, isn't there? I mean, Robin Koch was very easily lost on the first on the Van Dijk goal. Pascal Strauch also headed the ball straight to Mohamed Salah on a free kick. I think it was a free kick. And there was another situation as well later on in the game when Robin Koch, actually I don't think it was from a set piece, but we can talk about this as we go on. But clearly there were still issues from set pieces. So Daniel Ryan says, I think our obvious frailties from set pieces and crosses into the box need to be looked at. I completely get the fact our starting centre-back and captain were out yesterday and who replaced him, but we looked like conceding from every cross that we faced last night. And Daniel Vatterini says, why did Liverpool seem to have three men on the edge of the area every time we cleared the ball straight out to their feet? Who wants to jump on this one in terms of the set piece side of things? Do you want to jump in, Tom?
I think the two things are somewhat linked in that we tend to put all the men back in the box for set pieces because we're not very good at dealing with them. So we put as many men back as possible. And then obviously there will be no one to pick up the players who are lurking on the outside of the box. So I think those two things are somewhat linked. Mm. It's just, I think to a certain extent, it's just really hard when you're up against big brick shithouses like Van Dijk and you're not a team full of big brick shithouses. But Liverpool were obviously very clever with their little routine that, you know, blocked off Klopp for their goal, and they did it multiple times. It wasn't just a one-off thing. And I half wonder if that's the kind of thing that maybe halfway through the season we might have picked up via scouting, that they do that. But obviously there's no season yet, so we, you know, they might not have even done it before.
I think they executed that block set piece so well that I think, you know, I think you know that's coming with Liverpool. That's a thing that they do, and they have been doing for quite some time. But they executed that so well that it didn't matter. But I think it looks awful when you watch it in real time. It looks like, how on earth have we just let Van Dijk get a free header? And it just looks like crap. But that is a very well-worked set piece that they work on those all the time, and they've scored a lot of goals from those since Van Dijk has signed. They've really been able to utilise him in that way, and clever runs make space for him to score.
And there was a goal that was disallowed as well because...
they did the same thing.
Curtis Jones tripped Koch, fortunately.
There was more of a foul in that one, whereas the other one was just... that he just puts his body in the way of him. But I had my sort of questions. I said saying to John last night that I had questions over Strouk's header that Salah then scored from. I felt he should have headed it off the pitch for a corner rather than head it back, because I think that invited them to have another shot. But I mean, even then, it was a ridiculous finish. That was the best moment of individual quality in the game. I don't want to criticise the defence, really, because at the end of the day, we're not great at set pieces anyway, let alone with a centre-back, two centre-backs making their debuts in that position.
Yeah, just a couple of things I guess I would say. One of them is that Strouk, I think, probably heads the ball out that way because he simply, like 5 minutes earlier, nearly chipped Melier with a clearance. So he's probably a little bit worried about doing that again. I also think, actually, I've watched that clip back a few times, and from what I can tell from the ball in, he's jumping, and he's sort of at the zenith of his jump, and he just sort of has to get anything on that header. And I don't think he has much control over where it goes either. And I think in that sort of situation, you'd much rather he just headed it and got a head on it and it went somewhere. You don't expect it to then fall perfectly to their striker, who then takes a touch and absolutely cleans it into the top corner. It's one of those things where it reminds me of our response to the Cardiff game last season, where we just picked the bones of every little thing, being like, could we have avoided this draw? It feels like you can do that a little bit too much as well. And I feel like, you know, I think I'm much happier actually with Robin Koch and Strouk as centre backs in terms of set pieces, because they're both fairly decent headers of the ball. They're both quite tall, and I think maybe Daniel was as being a little bit overreactionary. I didn't feel like we looked like conceding from every cross we faced last night. And I should say actually as well, something I haven't mentioned, but I think Robin Koch is really good at what I call backwards defending, which is defending when the ball's going back towards your goalkeeper and there's a striker on you. There's a few times when I've, and again, this is something I put in the video analysis, I think one of the reasons maybe we brought him in is because that's Cooper's weak point. Cooper's really bad at backwards defending, so I think that they brought in Koch so that in the Premier League, if those things do happen, then you'll have Koch dropping in, running back towards the goal and tidying up.
Yeah, that moment where I can't remember if it was Mane or if it was Firmino, but he was basically in a foot race with them. He got his body in front of them, and then he had Melier coming out at him. He was going towards him, but he just managed to sort of curve his run and then play a pass up the line. And yeah, that any time I see that scenario, I flash back to Derby at Elland Road, and it's a horrible thought crosses my mind. But yeah, he did really well in that situation.
Yeah, it was Mane, and yeah, again, I've included it in the video analysis. So if you're interested in seeing that, just sign up to our Patreon. But yeah, it uses his strength in an incredible way to get between the ball. And I think had it been any of our other centre backs in that situation, he would have been through and probably had a one-on-one chance. So it was nice to see that.
Well, Ayling would have just fallen over and won
that's
a free
kick,
to be fair.
Yeah. He would have had to force himself in front of the player first, so maybe he wouldn't have managed it. But
this is true.
Right, let's move on. I want to talk about, firstly, whether or not we can take anything from this game. I think there's a lot of people sort of looking at the game and being like, oh, we'll obviously be fine in the Premier League. I'm interested in whether or not you agree with that take, Tom.
I don't think you can ever read that much into one game. It definitely made me think that we can play the way that we played last year in the Premier League, and we can hurt teams playing that way. I know you're quite down on it, John, like the idea of reading anything into the game. I can't help but read something into it. You know, even if it's not entirely rational, it definitely made me think everything's probably going to be okay.
I would be certain that we could read into it that it's going to be fun this season. That's different from it being okay. But I genuinely think that the difference between us, West Brom and Fulham is that our game yesterday was fun and their two games just weren't.
Yeah,
and like, you know, yeah, maybe I think we'll have a great season. I think it'll be really enjoyable to watch. But I don't think that on the basis of yesterday's game, you can say we're going to be fine in the Premier League. That's all I'm willing to say.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's different things, there's different definitions of fine, aren't there? I mean, I don't think it means that we're finishing 10th or 9th or 8th, but you've got to think that if we can play that well against Liverpool, we can finish 17th. I don't know.
that's the bar. I mean, in reality, though, that is the first bar for us, and then anything else is bonus.
Well, but, exactly,
yeah, I would say I put an early take out there immediately after the game, which was essentially that take of we're going to be fine. Like, if that's what we can do at Anfield, we're going to be fine. But in the sort of cold light of day, it is like, okay, actually you can't really make that leap. But yes, definitely going to be fun. And I do think, yeah, I mean we're definitely going to be better than at least two teams. I think we're gonna go to at least one of the big six and cause a shock. I think we very nearly did yesterday. I think I'm willing to say we're going to beat one of them at one stage. It made me feel the same as I already felt, which is that I think we could be about 15th this season.
I feel like after the Sheffield United game, we'll have played Liverpool, one of the best teams, we'll have played Fulham, who I think we can agree are probably one of the worst teams.
The worst team.
And we'll have played Sheffield United, who are, you know, a different kind of challenge. And we'll have seen us against three different, very different kinds of teams. Then maybe then we can start to have some idea of, you know, how things are going.
Yeah, I'd like to think by that point we've got 4 points. I think that is really important. Like yesterday was fun, and we go away from it being like, well, we gave a good account of ourselves. Unfortunately, we lost, but we need to go and beat Fulham to follow that up. And then I would be more than happy with a point from Sheffield United. But obviously, if we've beaten Fulham with a good performance after we've had a good performance at Anfield, we could be saying, hey, let's go get 6 points. So, but we have to do that first before we can really judge.
Yeah, and I'll be feeling much more confident after we've gone to Sheffield United and put up some XG, basically. They're the games where I want to see us actually competing in. You know, like, scoring 3 goals from next to nothing against Liverpool is great fun, and I had such a good time yesterday. But I want us to be putting up 1.52 XG against Sheffield United and you know, not giving away a comparable amount as well. So, which is a very negative, boring way of looking at life. But you know, and this podcast is about,
we talk about analytics and tactics.
Yeah, exactly.
We are those people.
Right. Just quickly, positives and negatives from yesterday. Let's start with positives. Hobbsy, any positives from yesterday? Well, what are the positives?
we scored three goals at Anfield. Didn't see that at all beforehand. We had a good amount of our players that looked really comfortable in the Premier League. Everyone had their shaky moments, but and I feel I'd been saying a lot that I felt that Costa would thrive in the Premier League. I know quite a few people have said that, so it's hardly the hottest of takes. But I felt yesterday gave me good confidence that that will be the case. Those are my main positives.
Tom?
Yeah, I don't think any of our players looked out of their depth. I think there were some really strong performances, particularly Bamford and Ayling, I thought.
Yeah.
I also think that Calvin Phillips, although his offensive play, when he quite often took bad touches and overran the ball when he was trying to, you know, move the ball forward, I thought in defensive transition he was superb. There were many, many times when he cut out potential quick Liverpool breaks and fast attacks, and that bodes really well, I think, because that's going to be so important as we you know, go forward in the Premier League. So they would be the things that I would pick out.
Yeah, let's talk about negatives, because we should. But I think the main negative that stood out to me from at least the questions that people were asking were all about Pablo Hernandez. So Mickey T, nice and simple, says, Pablo not at his best, how come? And Thomas Wilson of Focus on Leeds says, thoughts on Pablo? I think we need someone with more legs in there and bring him on as a substitute. So let's just have a quick chat about Pablo, and then we can look at maybe some of the other negatives. But Tom, what was your take on Pablo yesterday?
I think Pablo just, you know, he's always operating in the margins of probability,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah.
He's always trying things. He's always, and he just had one of those games where not many of them came off. We could be talking about him having an assist if, you know, Van Dijk hadn't got his leg in the way of that cutback to Bamford. So with Pablo, I always think it's just a case of he's always trying stuff, and he does have games where none of it comes off. But if he's never trying, if he's not trying stuff, then you won't have those games where he's absolutely incredible and seems like he can do anything either.
It's going to be really interesting, isn't it, seeing how Pablo adapts to us being underdogs, I think. Because I think a lot of the time in the Championship, he gets time and space and the ability to sort of control games. Whereas yesterday, as we've said, it was a little bit more direct. It was a little bit more sort of arrowing things out towards the wide areas. And that's going to be a different game for him to sort of deal with. So, yeah, Hobbsy, what was your view of Hernandez yesterday?
Exactly what Tom said, really, that he is that player that plays the high risk, low percentage passes that they did not come off yesterday. And then that every time Pablo has a game like that, people ask the question like, "Oh, is Pablo broken?" But he always comes back and does something where everyone's like, oh, he's still incredible. And I think we'll still have that. I don't think just because he had a difficult game against Liverpool means that, oh, he's not going to cut it in the Premier League. He's going to be too unfit. He's too old, blah, blah, blah. He's like, in his head, his brain is a lot quicker than most players on the pitch. And I think he will still pull out some incredible passes. He will still run games for us, but yesterday didn't really suit him. It didn't work for him for whatever reason, but I still think he'll make a big contribution for us. All that to be said, that if we did somehow pull off the Rodrigo De Paul signing, I'd be very happy for Hernandez to become that sort of super sub that he was in that period of time after the lockdown. I think that would be a very good role for him, and we'd have someone that had a little bit more legs and dribbling ability in that role. But as that signing is probably not happening, I'm not going to write Hernandez off based on one game.
Anyone else want to add any negatives to the list here, or should we just keep it at Pablo and remain relatively upbeat?
the only thing that's a negative for me is before this season, we were all wondering in all the various preview pods and stuff, what will Leeds look like when they have less possession than the opponent, and we still don't know.
Yeah, we
52% to 48%.
We've got more possession than Liverpool.
Maybe we'll never know.
Yeah, it is a bit of an outlier as well. I mean, a lot of people were forcing me to trawl through Y-Scout today and find out the last time that Liverpool conceded three at home and also gave up more possession than they had themselves. And it was all the way back in January 2018, I think, against Manchester City, who, again, it was a 4-3 result. Although the honourable mention for Chelsea, who narrowly missed out in their 5-3 game. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating going forward, isn't it? It's going to be an absolutely belting season, I think, and I am absolutely looking forward to it. So it was a real pleasure for us to have that at that game as the opening one, and I feel like it will go down in sort of Premier League lore, really, in the sense that, you know, it was just an absolutely crazy fixture. It sort of announced Bielsa to the Premier League in the most perfect way, didn't it?
It fits the narrative of Bielsa, doesn't it?
Hmm. And you know, the way that we have that sort of Stoke win on the Bielsa's first win, I think the Liverpool loss will go down in the same sort of way in the Premier League era for Leeds. So yeah, it's quite nice to be able to enjoy that. Right, just a quick thing looking forwards. We're not going to cover the whole Carabao Cup fixture that much. I'm not doing a tactics thread, I'm afraid, because I do need to get sleep at some point, but we are playing Hull on Wednesday in the Carabao Cup. I should mention as well, the under-18 season kicked off on Saturday, I believe, with a 3-0 loss to Borough. I'm not going to say much more about this because this is simply to keep you informed as to what's going on around Leeds United. The Leeds United under-23s kick off tomorrow at 7 o'clock, I believe, against Stoke City in Premier League 2. And it will not be available on LUTV, I'm reliably informed, but there will be extended highlights going up as well, which is a bit of a shame because I would quite like to watch that. But that's what's going on in the next week. We will be back on Wednesday, I believe, with a Fulham preview. Feels like we're already regressing to last season. I will be speaking to Jack Collins of Fulhamish Pod on Tuesday, I believe. So we'll have a fan opposition perspective on that podcast, and then we'll have a little chat about the fixture and the tactics of it, and that will be on Wednesday. So do look forward to that. Right, the usual housekeeping rules. If you like our stuff, then do head over to our Twitter. That's where most of our engagement happens, and most of the things we put up are there. That's at AllStatsAren'tWe on Twitter. If you like our stuff and you want to get more of it, then do head over to our Patreon, where we put up a load of bonus material for our subscribers. I've mentioned already a number of times a video analysis piece that's going up tomorrow, but there are other things that go up there, bonus podcasts. We put some written stuff out there as well, and we put up a couple of video analysis pieces during the week. Three people who have done that in the last week are Tommy Miller, Alistair Lang, and Polly Cummings. So thank you guys for joining us. And all that remains for me to do is to say thank you to Josh.
Cheers, mate.
And thank you to Tom.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you in a few days' time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.